true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, recite you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Say this so that the listener can hear. I'm going to risk some plosives today in order to make it easier for you guys to squeeze in on the mic. So squeeze in on the mic.
I'm going to say Peter Piper picked a pussy full of pickles.
Oh, we're going. We're going. Oh,
God damn it. Jesus.
Tape's rolling.
Burning tape.
We're burning tape, Katie. Tape the burn.
Well, so we can start with we taught a class together yesterday.
Are you smoking a fucking bowl? What's going on over there? Did you just hit the bong?
This isn't Wheel of Time.
Oh, and I have a story about your other podcast friend, Kara.
Oh, yes.
They are nice and keep trying to have me on their program. And we keep having problems because of me.
We keep leaving town.
Well, that's part of it. But yeah, just I missed. We tried for a long time to schedule. Then we finally found a time that worked. And then I wrote it in as the wrong time zone.
You?
Yep.
Got a calendar thing wrong?
Yeah, imagine it. Think
that's
about it. Imagine.
Unfathomable.
Try, expand your mind. Yeah. So I was fully like out to dinner with people having a drink. And there was an email that was like, so are you going to come? And I was like, what? And I wrote back, no, aren't we? Anyway, you get the idea. They're very nice. They've rescheduled me again. We found another time. Blah, 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 blah. So I get to tell my fun story of sexual abuse history on that fucking podcast. Wee! So I'm going to do a bunch of bits. I'm going to open with bits about dicks and pussies, and it's just going to be appropriate all day.
Just make everybody uncomfortable.
It's going to push the edges of everybody's podcast.
Definitely not going to do that.
You want me on? Here's what it's going to look like.
I'll be very sincere until they make it obvious that there's room for bits.
And then you'll show them your bits.
And then I'll take my vagina out and put it on the table. Yeah. Yeah. It's detachable. Yeah.
Nice.
It folds up too. It's also reversible.
Oh.
So you can flip it inside out and
turn
it back
into
on.
A penis?
No, it's just a different color vagina.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So you can like wear it twice like you do your underwear.
Exactly. And it matches different outfits.
What is happening? So you're gonna get really inappropriate, which leads us to what you were about to say when you had to get weirdly intimate and heavy on our very public-facing corporate group workshop we taught.
Yeah. Yesterday. I felt so proud of that, actually. Like, first of all, I want to say I loved that gig yesterday. They were such a good group.
They were really solid people. They were super willing.
So open.
We all had I don't know. I think we... Like, we were doing this one exercise that needed dancing. We're like, you're going to dance like a total dweeby dork.
Yeah. Moment one.
Moment one. Like, jump out the gate. Like, now we're going to be silly.
Yeah.
Now we're going to be goofy. And they totally went for it. And it worked.
Yeah.
It did its job, which was to break their fear of looking ridiculous.
And they just, then you were right when you said this in class, they just flew with it for the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they started on the trajectory up and they just went higher and higher each exercise. It was so cool.
And they were consistently surprised. This is the joy of it, was their consistent surprise at their own discoveries.
Right?
And that's a real joy. When the teaching lands like that, it just feels so good.
Very satisfying.
We play this word at a time thing, where we were like, words of wisdom, and they're like, just go around the circle and be like, when you innovate, you should work together.
It's
whatever.
One person at a time saying one word at a time. Yeah.
And this one woman who was very quiet, who had a very quiet voice, what was the sentence? It was something like, when we
work together, you will hear me.
Yeah, you will hear. And then it got to her and she said, me. And everybody just about started fucking crying.
Yeah.
Because it was like the truest thing that had been said all day.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, yep, we will hear you.
Yeah. You could feel that she had not been heard a lot.
Yeah.
And she just let that be present in one word, the word me.
Yeah.
It was really nice. Which reminds me of the other guy who...
The real muscly dude.
This guy.
Yeah.
We got like a inside joke gesture for the group that arose organically, where this guy in the class was trying to articulate that he felt heart connected to someone in his dyad when we had them working in twos.
Uh-huh.
And he came out of it. It was like touching his chest like a monkey. It looked like to me.
Right.
As if to say, I felt really.
And I didn't know what to say. So he just kept tapping his chest.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And he was real muscly too. So it had that sort of hulking shape to it. It was like a kind of a.
So sweet. It was like monkey full. Yeah. Wasn't it? Like,
And it was like, yeah. He felt it. And then that became the gesture. Anytime someone didn't know what to say, they just went.
And anytime someone had a heart experience, they'd go, I'm feelings. Anyway,
hopefully they will do that in the office from now on. They're like, how are you doing today? You know what?
Right here. Right here. Anyway, it was really fun. It made me feel, it revitalized my everything. I'm always like, oh, life is good. When I do those gigs, I always feel that way.
And we'd never taught together.
That's so fun. Isn't that fun?
Never taught together.
I loved it.
And it was just so fun to just like high five and back and forth, toss it back and forth,
easy
interrupt
peas.
Each other without it being over talky.
Totes.
It's like, yep, what you're saying. Yep, that's what I'd say. Or no, that's different than how I'd say it and maybe better.
Yeah. Good teamwork.
Love learning that shit.
Makes the dream work.
I had a different experience today, which I thought I'd share because like we had that. I had some like, well, hope this goes okay. I think it'll go fine. And then it was great.
What was the
gig? With yesterday. And then this morning, I had two of my solo clients.
Okay.
Now, 90% of the time with my solo clients, especially the first one in the morning, I go in going, oh God, I don't want to work today.
Yeah.
And most of the time, 90% of the time, I come out high as a fucking kite.
Exactly.
Because every time they make discoveries and things, band-aids are ripped off and like, oh my God, thank you.
100%.
And it's almost the same process every time. Like
totally.
I walk through this exercise and then I end up doing this exercise and this. It's the same one every time and they make the same discoveries and it's awesome. Today, I think this is a lesson in expectation and pre-scripting in
right.
my own head. I had two expectation flips. The first guy, very strong, mumbly accent.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is going to be a job.
Okay.
And even when he was explaining things to me, I was like, I can't understand what you're saying, literally.
Yeah.
And I have a good ear. And I was just like, can you write that in the chat or whatever?
Yeah.
But when we actually just walked through the process and did the work, like I watched each step of the way him understand how to be clearer, how to be sort of turn up the dial, as I often refer to like a little gain dial. Turn it up 2 ticks. Now one more tick. Oh, there it is.
Right.
And by the end, I was like, well, that guy just learned how to do a presentation. So the opposite of what I assumed at the beginning.
Yeah.
Second guy, great voice, very clear speaker. Could not have been more seized with mental blocks that I have ever seen and more resistance. And we did make discoveries, but
hard.
Like when we started, I thought, oh, this guy's got a really good voice and he's very confident energetically.
Yeah.
And he tripped over his own brain every 10 seconds.
Yeesh.
To the point where I could tell he was almost hyperventilating or like going to cry.
Aww.
It was, you know, touching to work with him.
Yeah.
But he didn't make huge strides.
Yeah.
If anything, I almost feel like I took him backwards because I got him in his head.
Oh.
But again, it was like, I expected you to be this guy.
Yeah.
And you went somewhere else entirely. It was just interesting to note. Neither of them felt like huge victories.
Right.
Which I usually walk away with.
Yeah.
Anyway, just still thinking about that. It just happened right before today's.
Gotcha.
Anything deep to say about that? I don't know.
Well, do you have the sense of like there were things you could have done differently, or is it just it went how it went and it was going to go that way?
That's a great question. The first guy, the one that ended positive, I think, no, that went how it went and he made strides that I didn't expect him to make. So that's a win. The second guy, I think I might have been in program mode a little bit where I was like, well, I'll just try the next step.
Yeah.
Instead of completely pivoting to a completely different place.
I see.
Which I could have done if I was a little more in tune maybe with what was going on with him.
Gotcha.
It was hard to know.
That's tough.
Good question.
Yeah. Because it's that serenity prayer thing. The thing, accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Because
we can't always tell when was it a time when I could have done something different and when wasn't it.
Yeah.
Because when it wasn't anything you could have done, it's nice because then you can take your hands off of it and go, well, there you have that.
Yeah, that was that. And I did give him something. He had something to work with
sure.
when he left by the end of the day.
Yeah.
I'll take my dollars and walk.
Yeah, for sure.
And he didn't even pay for it. His company paid for it. So
right.
I don't care.
Fuck those guys. This is a little tangential, but related. It's making me think about sort of not related to what you're describing, the challenge of these clients, but I'm thinking about I taught this morning from 7 to 9, 7 a.m. Jesus God. Why my California clients show up to a 7 a.m. class? I don't know why.
I know some of them and they hate it.
It's horrifying. We got to change it. I mean, it just worked for the majority. It wasn't my choice.
Right.
It
All was, your East Coast clients like 10 a.m. It's great. Perfect
well, but
time.
It was actually the West Coast people who couldn't do it at any other time.
Oh,
but
wow.
That was two sessions ago. So now we probably need to like talk again and readjust. Maybe we will do that. That's a good idea. Anyway.
Wait, are you suggesting communication?
Yes, it works quite nicely, okay. Believe it or not. Yeah. The three, we're talking about everybody's Enneagram type and getting into, I found this really great website that breaks all the pieces down so you get your fixation, the trap, the holy idea, the tool, the opposite of the trap, the opposite of the fixation, like what it looks like when you're integrated, what it looks like when you're not, like a lot of details on one page, very simple for each type.
Ooh, I love that.
Which is really cool. And so we were talking about the three today because someone in class is a three. And we were talking about something I heard a couple of days ago that I happened to take like a short online class about Enneagram stuff. They were talking about the three, this is not related to what you just said. I'm just looking at you and it made me think of three stuff.
Okay.
Talking about the idea of for the three, a useful exercise can be put yourself in situations where necessarily there's somebody superior to you at the thing you're doing.
Huh.
Because superiority is a trigger. Like when somebody's better than you at a thing, it's maybe not, I won't speak for you, but
I don't even know what that feels like. I can't even. Not at all true.
The three will do almost anything. They'll definitely leave their center and put on whatever mask needs to be put on to be the better one at the thing. So they go, if you can be honest enough, because you know they talk about honesty to change, that if you can be honest enough to go, that person is superior to me at that thing, I'm going to sit with what comes up in response to that, rather than come away from my center, put on a mask, and become superior to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, that came up with someone in class today, and it was a really good jumping off point for all of us, really, in terms of like, if anybody listening imagines somebody who's better than you at a thing, and they're just standing in front of you being better than you at it, and it's a thing that you want to be good at, what that brings up is a great jumping off point for a healing class. Because it brings something up for anyone.
Thanks. I hate it.
Yeah. You should.
Take it away.
Ooh. Yeah. No, yeah. That makes me really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Just the thought of it. But also I can imagine having done that. And actually, I think I've done that work a little bit.
Yeah.
Like I've probably witnessed it. And better than can show up in a lot of ways.
Right.
Either actually more skilled or more honored for it, whether they're more skilled or not.
Right.
That shows up in our work all the time. Professional jealousy or professional envy.
Right.
Like, well, this person gets all the accolades. Mm. So actually, that is the person I should hang out with or be near.
Right.
Not to get it from them, but because it's going to trigger me.
Right, right, right. Yeah. It was just the thought.
Conscious engagement with your triggers instead of avoidance of them?
What?
I don't want to.
Yeah. Tell me about it. Yeah, totally. Well, speaking of that, I can speak for my own version of that lately, which has been, okay, we're going to talk human design for a second and Katie's boyfriend man and how and my own healing, all of this. Interestingly, so let's see. For those of you who listened to last time's episode, you heard that I did a big healing on terror of turbulence and then got on an airplane that was terribly turbulent and was a mess. So I'm not done. But what we got clear on, Claudia and I, who was just a delight. She did. I don't know if I probably said this to you that the day after she did another 2 hours with me.
Wow.
Yeah. No. She texted, was like, hey, I have more for you. And I was like, okay. And she's like, you want to get on the phone now? I go, okay. And she spent 2 hours with me doing a healing just because. And I was like, what? Who are you, woman? Anyway, halfway through it, she was like, oh, and this man you're going to see, something about intimacy is connected with this thing of the fear of the turbulence. And I was like, that makes sense. So that thing has been really great with being here. Like, so for the listener, I took this 4.5 hour flight that was turbulent for 4 hours and 15 minutes. Yep.
So the question I have, do you also attract, attract what you fear? Because
I
rarely have turbulence on flights.
Well, not only, it's even more specific than that. You don't attract necessarily what you fear, though you do that, but you attract what needs to be triggered in you. So I know that's what's going on.
So I attract people who are better than me. Cool.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is clearly, I mean, every flight I've been on in the past 10 years or whatever it's taken me to stop flying has been radically turbulent in a way that makes no fucking sense. Also, check this. The flight was blue skies and white fluffy clouds the whole way. And awful. For a normal person who isn't me, you would have been like, oh, that was so annoying. That was 4 hours of annoying. I couldn't really sleep. They didn't serve us food. They didn't serve us water. The steward and I were not allowed to stand up the whole fucking ride. And the pilot kept coming on and being like, you guys, I'm so sorry. We can't even tell what's going on. Look at your windows. It's gorgeous. We're all like, yeah, what the fuck? Beautiful day.
And then everyone slowly turns towards
We know it's you. We know it's you.
So, yeah, it's really hard for me to have a thing. I keep saying this to people. I feel like a broken record, but I haven't yet run into something in my life that I can't heal. And this one has taken a long ass fucking time. For all my clients out there who are like, why does this have to take forever? And I'm always like, things get better. Everything's great. Just know that I too have a thing that's taking a long ass time.
Do you think if you were on a normal flight for once,
I have an answer,
you might be able to take some of that energy into your next turbulent?
No, because here's what happened. I wish that's a nice idea. What happened was after the 4 hour flight, I still had another 2 hour flight to take. Because I went to Phoenix and then from Phoenix to Oakland. Got on the flight from Phoenix to Oakland. It was wind and fairies the whole way. It was just like up and an hour and a half and down. The plane did not bounce a single time. And by that time, I was so exhausted from having worked on the terror the whole ride. Like the whole ride, every minute of the ride, every millisecond, I was tapping and opening my heart and bringing light and giving it to the passengers because that's very calming and grounding. Doing all kinds of techniques, but it was like this the whole way. And then
were your seatmates' arms bruised?
Oh, I am such good friends with the girl next to me, whose name is Katie.
Stop it with the Katies.
She invited me to her wedding. I held her hand, fingers intertwined a lot. We are very close now. We got to Phoenix.
She invited you to her wedding?
To her wedding.
Which is when?
It's in June.
Oh.
In Florida.
Shut
in Florida.
Your face,
I won't,
mouth.
I won't shut it. We get to Phoenix and she had a 2 hour layover and I had a 2 hour layover. And when we landed, I said, I am buying you a drink. Do not fight me. You saved my life. The guy to my left was an older gentleman and his wife to the left of him, they were an older couple. And I had his arm and her arm across the aisle. And it was just like anytime there was
she was across the aisle. Your new best friend.
Yeah.
Wow.
The guy in front of me was helpful too. He kept looking back and being like, oh, and he would give me a little wink. He's like, we're okay. And I'd be like, are we crying? Awful. So
Do you just like announce to everybody when it starts? You're like, I just need to let you all know.
Yep.
I'm going to be shitting myself for the next.
Well, I have to apologize now. I have a whole thing I say. I'm going to grab your arm a bunch of times on this flight. And it's because I'm terrified of turbulence and I'm so sorry in advance. And they're always nice. They always go, whatever you need, no problem. It's okay. And then it starts happening and I can't stop my arm. I can't stop it. But for the first 50 times I do it, I feel so bad about it because we're strangers that I'm always like, sorry, sorry, sorry. And they're like, you don't have to be sorry. It's okay. If it makes you feel better. Then I relax into that and go, well, this is what's fucking happening. Now me and Jimbo here and Katie, we are all connected forever. So she let me buy her a drink when we got to Phoenix. We bonded. We talked about her whole life. I could tell you her whole life story. She could tell you my whole life story. She's like, here's what you're wearing to my wedding. I mean, it was adorable.
Are you a bridesmaid?
That'd be cool. We exchanged numbers. She's texted me a few times since then. Delightful. She lives in Oregon, but flew into San Jose and was driving up for whatever reason. So she got in touch with me the next day. How is it seeing?
But she's getting married in Florida.
Married in Florida.
Also, what?
And she's from there.
Synchronicity.
Yeah. So I had a beautiful flight right after and then was supposed to get on another flight a week later to go home, which I have canceled and has been refunded, which I was like, go Southwest.
Really?
Refunded the full return flight amount.
Okay.
Was it because of Did you complain about the turbulence? Just be like,
no,
it's
I'm
just not flying.
I just called and said, like, hey, I can't make that flight. Is there anything we can do? And they looked at it, went, sure, we'll just refund it to you.
Maybe it was because there are different classifications.
I think that's what it is.
One of the ones that was.
Well, I selected it intentionally. That, like, I'm allowed to change this option,
right?
Whatever. But I didn't know if that meant I would have to get a different flight in exchange
or get credit or
get, yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah. So, but they refunded it.
So what portal are you taking back to?
I will take a vehicle known as a car. But here's a fun twist. This weekend is Memorial Day. In a 200-mile radius with budget, no budget rentals. I mean, we're looking in Livermore, Sacramento, San Jose. None of them have cars because they're rented for the fucking Memorial Day, except for the airport, Oakland Airport. The problem with the airport is you can't rent a car unless you have a return ticket or you put it on a credit card. You can't use a debit card to rent a car at the airport. It has to be a credit card. So I had to do this thing where I had to transfer a bunch of money from my checking account to my credit card to make the balance good enough that I could use the credit card to reserve the car on. Does that make sense?
And it's a one way, one of those one ways.
And it's a one way.
Especially brutal.
It was pricey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at the last minute of my trip here, I'm like hustling to make extra cash because I'm like, okay, mama's got to pay for Airbnbs, gas, the new car. I can't be at the stand-up show I produce on Sundays. So I have to, usually I would pay the comedians myself, but now I have to pay the venue and they're going to pay the comedians, which is money I would have had to have anyway, but it wouldn't have all been gone to the car and the Airbnbs and the gas and the food. So it's like a whole fucking, oh, and I have to pay the dog sitter more because she's going to stay 4 extra days. It's a shit show. But that tells you how terrified I was on that flight, that I'm willing to do all of that and make a couple thousand extra dollars real fast to not do it.
The fact that you didn't rent a car in Phoenix and drive here is shocking.
Thank you.
Like,
I almost did. But I don't know, something happened.
Was it Katie that just like, you're just having a drink and just kind of took your mind off it for 2 hours?
Okay, now this is an interesting question because it comes back to what you were saying about, do you create it with your fear, right?
Yes.
Yes, you do. And you create it with unconscious, unprocessed terror. This is something very deep in my nervous system that like needs to be, they're like, no, you're not done. See, the bouncy still scares you. So I'm like, okay, fine, fine. But when I got to Phoenix, I was so exhausted, I couldn't be scared anymore. I was like, fuck it, I'll get on the next. I did that one, it's fine. But I really felt that way, for real. And there was no turbulence.
So we don't want to just put you on a flight in the night before, get you hammered, then beat you up for like 4 hours right before you get on the plane.
I think like tasers.
Just repeated tasers.
Up and down the spine.
Right before you take it to the airport. And then just sort of throw you out of the car on the curb and the sky cap will be, ma'am, just give me the game.
There's nothing you could do to me that hasn't already been done.
So for real though, so you don't run into turbulence on planes?
I have experienced turbulence on planes.
Right.
I don't think I've maybe once had consistent, long-term, holy shit, when is this going to be over turbulence?
Yeah.
I've had a few times where I was like, oh, this is significant and I hate it.
Yeah.
But not, I'm not terrified. I'm just like, I don't like this.
Right.
But then most of the time, that was one. Okay, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll get a minute of bump and that's about it.
Yeah. See, that's how it used to be for me. It was always that way. I flew forever. Planes, planes, planes. A little bit of like bump, bump, bump. Oh, now we're good. That was my experience of flying for like 30 years. And then the universe said, you're going to deal with some deep shit. You ready? And I was like, no. And it was like, here we go, bitch. Now here we are. Anyway, there's that. So I'm driving back, everybody. 5 fucking days. So I did a whole bunch of like this morning, actually, resistance work because I was having a ton of resistance to driving back. I was like, fucking really? I just fucking did this and I wanted to then. Now I'm like, so I cleared the resistance, which is good. So now I'm able to look at, okay, well, how can we make this fun? Like, where am I going now? I guess we'll go to Austin again because I like it. We're going to see my dad. That's cool. Don't want to drive through Texas wondering if there's a way to go down. So I'm just like, okay, now what? How do we make it fun?
You can't go south of Texas. I just want to.
Yep. One option. option is I could take the middle path through the country. The problem with that is that's when you get legitimately right now tornadoes and bad thunderstorms.
Or still some snow going through the Rockies.
Yep.
And if it's there, Katie will find it.
Exactly. I had a friend who I told the story to who told me, I'd like to say their name, but we'll do anonymous. This is a funny thing. When you tell people, sometimes when you tell people you have a terror response to things, you learn a lot about the person you're talking to.
Yes.
I had a friend who, this was her idea of comforting me.
laughing. That's
was to tell me two horrifying things that happened to her on airplanes.
Oh,
no.
And I'm on the airplane texting her for support while she's telling me the story. And then I feel bad. I'm like, I have to interrupt her and be like, hey, can we just not right now with the story of when the landing gear didn't come down on the flight you were on? They were on a flight, this person. Landing gear wouldn't come down.
Oh.
They announced the landing gear wouldn't come down. They did the foam thing. Do you know about the foam thing?
I think I might know who this person is.
Okay. They did it. Yeah. You guys know what the foam is?
Yeah. Well, they do it for fire.
Yeah. That's
it's fire
I was
retardant
say.
Foam, probably because you create sparks as you land.
But it creates like a soft landing pad. It's not concrete anymore.
Right.
They literally spray the entire runway with this foam.
It's not on the plane.
No.
It's on the runway.
Runway.
Dang.
So the runway for miles, however long a fucking runway is all this white, bouncy, spongy foam.
Which now no one else can land on.
Nope.
Like once you land, every other plane is getting diverted for 8 hours.
But think about what that is. That means you're landing on the under nose of the plane, on the ground, on the
grind.
Foam.
It's like a good, Jesus.
So she went through that shit and decided that'll be a good story to fucking tell me while I'm dying in the middle of the air. And I was like, maybe not this story right now. She's like, oh, but that's better than the time we lost the engine. She lost the engine on a wing. An engine went out. So then this is what the airlines did. They got everyone on the plane hammered. They were like,
well, if we do crash, you'll survive better.
That's
because
true.
You're floppier body.
Loose.
Yeah.
They were like, drinks for everybody. Got them all hammered. And this person was like, I said, so how was that for you when you landed? And she was like, I don't remember. I was hammered.
They were fully hammered. Did they have vomit in the streets?
But like landing without a fucking engine? I mean, the engine went out and they had to do an emergency landing at a nearby airport.
Wow. Yeah, you don't need to hear that story. It's a great story, but you don't need to hear that.
That's why I'm telling
in the
you.
Middle of your trauma.
So people do interesting things when you're going through stuff.
I'm only going to say this because you're not flying home.
Yeah.
The worst experience I've ever had on a plane.
Do you want to hear it?
Is a touch and go.
Oh.
And a circle and land.
I've been through one of those.
And the whole time you're circling and landing, you're like,
what happened?
What was wrong the first time?
They
and
didn't
have
tell
we
you?
Actually fixed? No. They were just
so they
like,
touched down and then immediately picked back up?
Yep. And then just circled for 10 minutes.
I've been through that, but they tell you immediately what the problem was.
I don't remember any explanation that made sense. Then
what was
than
going
like,
through your mind? Brakes don't work?
The only thing that was going through my mind the whole time is, how did they fix it?
Right.
Like, right. I don't see anyone crawling around outside with a wrench.
They just cycled they rebooted the system while you're in the air.
Yeah. And we're just coming down again. I'm just like, okay.
The one I had that was like that, you'll love this. It was in Albuquerque. We get feet from the ground and then a wind shear hit and the plane goes left and right.
Oh, God.
It goes like whoop, whoop, real fast.
Apparently that's my trauma. You just triggered something in me.
And then they went right back up. We were feet. I could touch the fucking ground if my hand were outside the window. But they just went right back up and then did the loop-de-loop. And they were like, okay, we're going to wade through these wind shears. We couldn't land after that because we weren't stable. We were lefty-righty, left whoop, whoop, left, right. And then I was like, great. How do we know there's not going to be another left, right when we land? And there wasn't. And we landed and it was fine.
Oh.
I've
never told
left,
you guys
right.
about the time that the plane I was on got hijacked. Lies.
It was by frat boys.
I wanted a better story. You guys were better than mine.
Fuck, you can have my stories, man. I'll take your fucking drama-less flying. I'll take
any
that.
Day.
I know. I've had like, I mean, I think the easiest way is to say that I haven't been through that much turbulence. I've never been not served on a plane.
Mm.
Maybe they'll sit down for 5 minutes, but
yeah,
to be on a 4.5-hour flight, like at some point you got to start like passing waters up.
Well, they started with the water service and then they made them sit down. So like an eighth of the plane got water. Then it was funny because at one point a stewardess was like, I'm just going to go rogue and give people water like 3 hours into it. And her buddy from the back of the plane was like, Stephanie, take a seat. You have to sit down, Stephanie. Stephanie was like, I'm giving these people water. She's giving water.
Pass them down. Just start tapping people the back row. Just be like, hey, just keep.
But the problem with that is then everybody has to pee and then they get up and go to the bathroom and then you get sued when they hit their head on the ceiling.
And they pee all over the bathroom.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. That'd be the worst thing. Like, I'm always the guy on the plane that the second ding, I'm up.
Yeah.
Like, it's, yeah, you know, I've been drinking in the airport. I've been, you know, I got nothing. I've been drinking coffee.
So we're learning more about you.
Cool. Good times, everybody. So, right, so Katie has healing to do on turbulence terror.
More healing.
Again.
I can take care of that for you.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
I'm like, all right, let's go.
Take any effort.
We're going to do a Des meditation today.
I mean, I am like at the point of like, all right, so what is it? MDMA? Do I need to do ayahuasca? Do I need to go to shock therapy? Like, after 13 years of working on it energetically and through all the things I know how to do, I'm open. Like, I don't care what form it needs to take. Let's go. But I don't have that answer yet.
Yeah, and you're not good with strong drugs. Medications.
No, that's another thing. People are always like, just take a Valium. And I'm like, I wish I could. I'd be fucked for 3 days after a Valium. Good times.
I cut my Zoloft in half for 5 days. It did not go well.
Okay.
I realized just how much my medication is, like, you know.
Staving off the demons.
Yeah, it's not just a cushion right now. It's,
I hear you.
Because I keep thinking, like, oh, I gotta back off so I can work on whatever it is I need to work on.
Mm.
Right. And it was just like,
nope.
Not there yet.
Yeah.
I just need to just not struggle right now.
Yeah. Sometimes it's the foam on the runway that you need.
You need the cushion.
So we have questions from people?
I think we do.
Let's see them.
We have questions from a couple weeks ago.
I will have to do at least one recording from my New Mexico trip, which I'm taking a week.
Cool. Yeah. What's going on there?
Going with family. Okay. This is actually relevant to our show. Everything's relevant to our show. I don't know why I have to force it. So I have this trip planned. And when it first was coming up, I definitely was treating it as okay, we'll do this. My parents really wanted to take this trip. And I was really feeling it. I was doing it dutifully.
Okay.
And part of it, and I had this whole story around like, oh, I can't take the time.
Right. We
and
talked
we
about
this.
We
did some healing on that. And the side benefit, I mean, I haven't made any new plans that expand my time frame because I do feel more free to do so now.
That's cool.
But also the extra benefit was like, now it's just like, yeah, I'm going on a fucking trip. Like, have a good time. Like, there's no sense of like,
have to do this.
Have to.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, I'm excited about it. I have zero expectations about what it'll look like.
That's great.
I'm just along for the ride.
And what's it for? What are you guys doing?
Well,
they want to go back.
They just, to be honest, they're both aging significantly. They are both in their 80s now. And they kind of said, this might be our last trip to New Mexico. You know, like, let's do it while we still can.
Yeah.
And so we're, you know, they're driving out with the family, with my brother and his family. And that was part of it is like, I didn't think I could take the time to do the drive.
Okay.
That was just going to be too much time on either end.
Okay.
So I made other plans and now I can't expand that time because I do have things that take me up to it.
Okay.
But so I'm flying, but they're driving out.
Okay.
So they're taking a little road trip, looking at some colleges for my nephew and
fun.
That'll be lovely. I'm actually okay to miss that part still.
Yeah.
It still feels okay to miss. That's a lot to manage. But then once we're there, we're just going to mostly like center ourselves in Santa Fe, see my favorite aunt in the world who I love so much.
Aww.
She's the coolest. Donna, Aunt Donna. She's my little mini Dolly Parton.
Oh, fun.
Described her as. And my cousins and some other folks and just friends and family. And we'll like from Santa Fe, we'll go to Los Alamos and we'll go to the Jemez Mountains and we'll go to Bandelier and we'll go to, you know, we'll just
all
do
the
a lot
stuff.
Of just see all the stuff and all the old haunts and all the old people.
Have you been to Ojo Caliente out there?
I have, but not for 25, 40 years.
They vamped it up.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. My sister went recently and sent me pictures from it. And I was like, I gotta go.
I know I've been, but I was probably a child when I went.
Yeah, this coming Christmas, I'm making that a priority.
10,000 Waves is also pretty nice.
Yes.
In Santa Fe, which
yes.
is a nice hot tub yeah. zone.
Yeah.
That I've definitely been to a few times.
Rock on.
But mostly it's just going to be people and some sightseeing.
Great.
You know, and I just have very little expectation about what it's actually going to feel or look like.
Yeah.
I'm not writing any scripts, which feels very freeing to do.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Oh, and we never got into, so the way the whole healing thing with Claudia helped me with
yes.
boyfriend locally.
Right. Oh, yeah. It all comes back around.
Yeah.
Whiplash.
So Human Design, let's call my, we gave him a name, Chauncey. Right?
Yeah.
Chauncey.
I think it was Chauncey Macklethorpe or something.
Yeah. Let's give him a full three names. Chauncey, McSteamyberg, Maplethorpe.
I think it was Lord. Lord Chancellor Chauncey.
Is that it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. But now I like Mapleborg or whatever I just said.
Lord Chauncey Mapleborg.
That's kind of fun.
Let's do it with that. Well, because Chancellor already belongs to the Chancellor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lord Chauncey McMapleborg.
McMapleborg, so he's Scottish, Swedish,
and a cyborg.
He's Scottish and Swedish at the same time,
and a robot. Is that good?
I don't know. So I don't know, Katie. Is it good?
It's real good.
All right,
Lord Chauncey. We'll stay there. So Lord Chauncey and I. Lord Chauncey has a fifth line body. Let's talk about the hell that means. Fifth line bodies. So if folks remember, if you're into Human Design at all who are listening, you have a thing called a profile, and your profile has two numbers in it. So he, in his case, he's a 3-5. I'm a 6-2. You're a...
I always forget.
Can't remember.
5-2.
Don't know.
5-3.
5-1. I don't remember what you are either. Anyway, your profile tells you the role you play in the theater of life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've been precast. You like to think you could be this, but you're actually just this, and that's the deal. The number on the left side of the slash, two numbers, 6-2-3-5. The number on the left speaks to the nature of your personality and your conscious mind. The number on the right speaks to the nature of your unconscious body. So what kind of body do you have and what kind of personality do you have? So he has a fifth line body, which means it's like it functions like it's called the heretic universalizer, savior heretic universalizer. So the fifth line gets projected on radically. That they are the savior and they have all the answers. And then when they do one thing that's human, what are you looking up? Now I'm distracted.
Sorry, my Human Design.
Okay, what's your profile?
I don't see.
It's right there. Profile 5-2. Self-motivated hero.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
So you have a fifth line personality, by the way. So this is relevant to you. Pay attention. Okay. So line. It's good. It's good stuff.
Okay.
Fifth line body. This is happening unconscious to him. He's not doing this. This is just what his aura is doing.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in his field, you will project onto him that he has all the answers to your problems. He's the savior. But then the second he does any human failing thing that if I did, you'd be like, oh, that's annoying, but oh, well, we love her. They become the heretic and they get sort of thrown out of the castle or out of the tribe. So the thing to understand about a fifth line body is that they have their body, and in your case, personality, aura, has a dynamic relationship with what's called the projection field. So anytime you're around a fifth line, you have to be aware, if you know, that anything you're thinking about them is a full projection of your own mind
mm-hmm.
or unconscious self. Now, most people, we all are projecting all the time on people anyway, but when you have a projector near you or a fifth line person near you, you can be assured that whatever's coming up for you in their presence is really not about them. 90%, 80% is the case of that. It's something you're projecting onto them in a really intense way. So I, knowing this now and knowing him as long as I have, every single time something has come up between us on this trip, I just go right into I have this resistance right here. I bring the light like I teach everybody in all the goddamn episodes and all the fucking classes.
So
tired of it. Bring the
light
right into the place. And then it integrates and passes through my head, does my thing, and then I feel the feelings, and then it's done. And then I'm just experiencing him as like a delight. It's been incredible the amount of shit I've been able to just be like, oh, there's a new piece of resistance to him. Oh, there's a new judgment of him. Oh, there's a new projection onto him. Clear it in 20 seconds, and then I'm just like, hey, what are we doing now? It's been amazing. Now, it's also been work because I have so much relational trauma. This is the real truth from my childhood, which is connected to this fucking turbulence shit that, and that which I could say more about Anyway, trigger warning, we may talk about sexual abuse.
I took a turbulence shit once.
Jesus.
Wow.
Wow. Can we flip those, the order of those jokes? Repeat that content warning again.
Where, yeah, it's a trigger warning, sexual abuse, poop joke, sexual poop. Which, side note, there was an episode of Armchair Anonymous.
I thought you were going to tell us about the anally that you had earlier.
The what?
The anal sex you had on this trip.
No, not going to tell you about that.
That was less turbulent, surprisingly enough.
On an episode of Armchair Anonymous recently, the topic was people call into the show and tell stories on the topic of the week or the month or whatever it is. And this one was public evacuation, where you shit yourself in public. And a woman was telling a story about running in a marathon because people shit themselves all the time in marathons. She was wearing tight shorts, you know, biker short type things, shat herself, had it like a mile to go, kept going. And she said, I can't explain it to this day, but the combination of the moisture of the poop inside the underwear and the banging her feet on the ground and the vibration up her legs, she had an orgasm from feces moistening her vulva while running. So she's running into the
I feel like that required more of a content warning than talking about the sexual abuse.
Running to the, what's that called? The finish line.
That's what they call it.
Yep.
She made a finish line.
And she said she was yelling out loud to cover the orgasm sounds, like, laugh yelling.
Wow.
Well, coming from shit in her vagina.
Which is also not good.
Not
yeah,
great.
Yeah. No, yeah.
No.
From what I've heard.
Oh, yeah.
pH balance.
She, yeah, all the way off. Things. I hope she celebrated with lots of cranberry juice.
And lots of showering.
Douchage.
Yeah. That's the thing that happened. Okay.
How is that relevant?
Story.
Yes. Healing.
Oh, just, yeah, the turbulence stuff. So I'm trapped. If I feel trapped in an airplane and out of control. So all my stuff is all about control of my body, being out of control of the body. And intimacy, if you're sexually abused, right, as an infant, the way I was, wired into my nervous system is the idea and the awareness that being close with a person means they're violating you and hurting you and they're maybe going to kill you. So there's all these layers for me of processing intimacy at, like, particularly sexual intimacy as a major threat on a very deep brainstem level. So when I got here, Chauncey and I were like, I haven't seen you in so long. Sex for 48 hours, just all of it. Love and sex and love and sex. And then something shifted in me that was like, get away from me. And I knew I was in an activation. Like, and this is all brainstem level. None of it's my conscious mind. It's all on the subconscious. So I just started working on it, moved it. Everything got better. Talked with him about it, shared with him what was going on. How does it make you feel? Like, what I did in the past was believe the feeling is a real feeling about him.
Mm-hmm.
And start to go, I guess we have to break up.
Believe the projection.
He makes me feel terrible. He makes me feel terrible. No, his fifth line body is a projection screen. My trauma was up because he was standing in front of me. He just has to stand there and I'm activated. Now, if you add to that, we have sex with each other. This young part of me that equates sex with you're going to kill me and I'm going to die for sure. And the projection screen of him, it's all going to come up. Mm-hmm. So it's all been coming up. But this time I'm doing it all like, oh, a new thing is up for me. I'm going to go and then if I have a piece of it that requires the relational dynamic with him, I'll bring him in on it and be like, hey, can you sit there while I feel this weird feeling and process this thing? I'd be like, sure, babe. And he just sits there and I look at him and I'm like, I feel this feeling when I process. And then I'm like, vegetables for dinner? That is a whole new relational dynamic for us because I finally fucking figured it out. Like, I can't even tell you. It's almost like I have no, I mean, me and Chauncey are like figuring out if we want to be together and we're having a great time. It's been really intimate and great. But like, that's like a whole other thing to like this thing that goes on for me, which I now understand is a thing that just goes on for me. And each day that I'm here, I get more and more of it cleared out. And I feel so much more just like safe with him, happy with him, comfortable with him. I keep being like, I guess you just get to feel relaxed in your relationship. That's new for me. Like, not constantly
right.
One foot out the door.
The tension is an exception to the rule as
right.
opposed to
the baseline.
Rule, the baseline.
Yeah. So it's been, wow. It's like, I want to tell a narrative that's like, everything's been romantic beauty every second since I've been here. We had 48 hours of that. And then my shit came up and his shit came up. We had one disagreement and then we processed it and then we were good. And now we're good. But like, that's what humans go through, I think.
Yeah.
Relationships. So that's what's been happening. And I don't want to leave him. Now I'm right. Like, damn it, I don't.
And now you also know that you're not ready, but also that you're not. The part that I'm a little heartbroken about is the thought that it's going to be harder now to decide whether you can keep flying back here at any regular basis, at any regular.
Well, here's how I'm getting through that. That's true. But what we talked about it, and I said, would you consider just thinking about you're the next one who makes a trip?
Yeah.
The reason I'm not being more pushy or strong about that is because of our history. Like, he's still got a lot of, I'm still kind of afraid you're just going to bail because yeah. I've bailed twice, you know, which I think is very fair on mm-hmm. his part. And he's not mean to me about it. He's not withholding of his love or anything. He's very, he's cozy, he's cuddly, he's loving, but he's also like, I need a minute. So I asked him to think about if he'd be willing to, given all the givens, come on out in June maybe and see my ass. So we'll see. That would solve that temporarily.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all you can do is work on the next step.
Yeah. One step at a time.
Yeah.
I've heard that. One day at a time.
Do we have questions from people? I feel like we should get to them.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Rami here. So when I came out of the Italian hospital, I'm still talking about it. How many weeks has it been? Anyway, I wasn't pooping for days and days and days after the surgery. So as I was getting ready to leave the hospital, the doctor prescribed something to help me, which was olio di vaselina. It was Vaseline oil, which we don't really have as a thing that exists in the United States. Petroleum oil. And he said, take it at lunch and dinner, which I did. And it still wasn't helping for many days. But I started taking more than just lunch and dinner. But I was saying to my cousin who lives in Italy, I was like, why didn't they give me or suggest castor oil, you know, which in my opinion works quite well. And my cousin was like, oh, well, Italians don't really consider castor oil because they have a bad association with it. Apparently, during Mussolini, castor oil was the preferred torture method. They would make victims drink a lot of castor oil, and it would make them suffer. Like, I don't know if you've ever had castor oil, but you take one spoonful and you have explosive diarrhea. So if you drink, you know, a good deal of it, then you're probably having some really bad cramping and who knows what's going on. So anyway, bad association from castor oil led to me swallowing fucking petroleum, which, let me tell you, did not work as well. Well, that's behind me now. Rami's rules.
All right, so.
Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. We have some questions. Would you like to get one at a time, go yeah. into their records, and then yeah. go back out, and then go to the next one?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we will start with a question from FOP, friend of podcast, uh-huh. Fontana Butterfield.
Okay.
Who is actually the person who hired us and booked us for the job that we did yesterday.
So fun.
It all works all together. And her question is, it's a general question for all of us. Will artificial intelligence change our world as rapidly as we are hearing from the news?
Okay. Oh, boy. Oh. All right. I'm going to open the records of Fontana and the records of consciousness. So let's do this together. We'll close our eyes. We'll take a few deep breaths into the low belly. And we'll drop our shoulders just a little bit. We'll soften the tongue muscles. And we'll soften the jaw just a little, dropping the low jaw a little bit away from the upper jaw. Loosening our grip on the muscles at the back of the eyes. Feeling into the muscles of the quads, glutes, hamstrings, calves, shins, letting them go. Any gripping in the ankles or feet, just choosing to release those. Any gripping in the belly or the back muscles, just becoming aware. Allowing those to drop open. Oh. And so we do acknowledge the forces of light. Asking for guidance, direction, and courage to know the truth as it is revealed for our highest good and the highest good of everyone connected to us. Holy Spirit of God, protect me, please, from all forms of self-centeredness and direct my attention to the work at hand. Help me to know Fontana Butterfield and consciousness itself in the light of the Akashic Records. Help me to see Fontana Butterfield and consciousness itself through the eyes of the Lords of the Records. And enable me, please, to share the wisdom and compassion that the masters, teachers, and loved ones of Fontana Butterfield and consciousness itself have for Fontana and consciousness. Okay, so in connecting with the field of awareness that I'm going to call consciousness, and it's the records of consciousness, just such an interesting idea in and of itself. Can we expect as human beings for AI to, what was it?
Change the world as rapidly as the news are letting us think, or as we are hearing from the news.
Is it going to happen as rapidly? No. Is it going to happen the way the news says? No. Is it going to happen? Yes.
Is it to be feared?
Is it to be feared? No. Is it going to happen quickly? Yes. Faster than we're comfortable with, some of us? Yes. Give me a second here. I want to follow up with her and ask her some more questions. Would you be willing to text her? She just responded to me before I came in here today, so I think she might be with her phone near her. My question for her is, what is she specifically afraid of or concerned about or wondering about? Let's say it is fast. What is her fear about that or concern or wonderment? Okay, so there's energy in her field that is like a fog, kind of a fog through the heart and up into the mind. Which has to do with certain green medication I think she's taken into her body that sometimes creates paranoia that is not correct or helpful. So the energy of the marijuana, I'll just say it, that has been maybe overly indulged a bit, or like, I should say, it's more like leaned on more than we would prefer for her. Not that it's bad and wrong, but just if it's being leaned on more regularly than the system can actually process effectively, it leaves energies behind that cause fear-based projections that are not great. So that energy from the third, oh boy, it's all the way through the whole system, from the root up through the second, into the third, up through the heart, and out the back of the neck. they're advising you, Fontana, and then I'll come back to the question, to stay off the news a bit, just a bit less news in general. There's being informed, and then there's feeding an obsessive, neurotic fear system that keeps you from facing the pain in your own personal life. So we have to understand as a human race, when we are caught in the addictions that the corporations want us caught in, that's a real thing. You know, like the news conglomerates want you clicking on all the things and watching the news, and therefore they have to keep you afraid so that you keep tuning in to have the answers they give you come. Did you know that you could not watch the news at all and have a pretty happy, peaceful life? Did you know that? So, like we're being sassy here, but it's to make a point of how ingrained the idea is that you have to watch the news, and how could I not watch the news? And I wouldn't be a good lefty political person if I weren't watching the news, but you actually would be just perfectly wonderful if you watched it less. And a lot more peaceful and a lot happier. Also, they'd like you to ease up on the marijuana intake. Okay, we cleared a bunch of that. Now there's something at the brain stem. Has she responded?
No.
Okay. Now there's something at the brain stem I'm going to work with for a second. And then we'll come back to the question. See, the way consciousness works is it's always looking at, why are you asking the question? What is this about for you? Does that make sense?
So I was just checking.
Yeah. Why are you asking the question, what is this about for you? Because people think the question they're asking and the answer they think they need is what they need. It isn't always the case. Sometimes you have to look at, why are you asking the question in order to meet the need behind the question? So if she were here or connected to us, I would say feel into your brainstem now. But we have permission to work with her, so I'm going to just go into her brainstem now. And if you guys could feel into your brainstem, back of the neck, that'll help. Oof. There's a really tight bit of, almost like a metallic key, like a key that they used to use to open a, like a skate key for skates, like a metal key. In the back of your brainstem, or in the brainstem, I should say, back of neck. We're just processing that. And it's interesting because that stuck metallic energy at the back of the neck is again, I hate to say it, related to the marijuana intake, the level of it. Sort of like... years and years and years of doing any one thing to any part of your body creates some kind of residue of that thing, right? So years and years and years of this, for whatever reason, is looking like this metallic stuck energy at the back of your neck. It's because every piece of unprocessed emotional pain that you carry in your heart, we've talked about this before on here, but let's remember, has a secondary corollary place that it lives in the back of the neck or the brain stem. It solidifies there as a kind of resin, like unprocessed emotional resin in the brain stem at the back of the neck. So in this case, the marijuana is being used as a way to soothe the emotional pain, which is a band-aid, right? Of course. As opposed to you going into the emotional pain and actually processing it, which would then loosen what's going on at the back of the neck. This is tightening what's already in the back of the neck. Because if you think of the resin of marijuana, you know how there's resin, like with the sticky resin of marijuana leaves? That, if you smoke it enough, it piles up the molecules, the energy of it, on the already crystallized resin in the brainstem. It's hard to articulate. Okay, so we cleared the key part. Now I'm just sitting with, there's a bunch of resin in the brainstem from the unprocessed emotional stuff in the heart, from the whole of your life, like all people have. Pain with your mom. that got buried underneath. Well, that's just how she is. It's okay. It's fun. Hippies. Whee! That's just how she is. I have to accept it, which is a survival coping strategy. Under that is a bunch of pain for the inner child. Stuff with your marriage. I won't go into it, I promise, in this forum, but marriage needs not being met. Putting other people before yourself for a long, long time. Abandoning yourself. All this stuff that wants to be processed. The pain of it all. The sadness of it all. The grief of it all. It's a lot easier to worry about, are the AI taking over? In a way. Almost because it feels like something we can't control. Whereas there is something you could actually do about processing your own stuff, but you know it's going to suck and be really uncomfortable. So let's just worry about a thing we can't do anything about. Okay, now that's what they want to talk about with regard to what are we really talking about here for you? And it's all of that. Now, truth, conscious awareness. Will the AI... I'm sorry, Cassidy. Can you read it one more time? Will the AI, what was it?
Will artificial intelligence change our world as rapidly as we are hearing from the news?
I just get a no on that, which I know seems counterintuitive, because the way it's presented on the news is, again, it's meant to hook you. It will happen faster than some people are comfortable with and slower than other people are comfortable with. But no, not in the way that you hear about in the news. That's all I got.
Question.
Yeah.
Just ask conscious question. I think this is a one way to sum up how terrifying this could be or not. Will computers be making computers? Like, will AI be developing their own robots?
Yes.
Okay.
But what does that mean to you? What do you make that mean?
Well, if robots are making robots,
yeah,
and we're in a society right now where every quote unquote living thing has rights.
Right.
Then.
Oh, I see.
You know, if robots are creating their own robots for their own necessities, and we don't have the right to turn them off.
Why not? Why don't we have the right to turn them off?
Because it doesn't mean they're people yet, just because they got made.
Yeah.
Robots made robots.
Yeah. Well, that's a no. So you have to look at, like, what are you really asking? Are you asking, are they going to take over and kill us all?
I mean, that's eventually. That's thousands of years down the road. I'm just thinking of 30 years from now.
What I'm hearing you is, will AI become recognized as sentience?
Is that what you're asking?
Well, it's a two-part question. One, sentience, yes. But then if they're also creating their own offspring, then they can put whatever code in there they want. And they're going to serve themselves and not the human race who is destroying the planet.
Yeah, but not necessarily.
I think you're writing a script based on the Terminator. And so,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or what's it called? Or
any sci-fi,
and
anything.
All those, or iRobot, or I mean, you are writing a script that says if A equals B, then B equals C, and I don't think B equals C. Just because they're making their own thing doesn't mean that we will have no possibility of turning them off.
Well, we'll always have the possibility of turning them off, but there's going to be two sides arguing. There's going to be, let's just say, for all intents and purposes, the Republicans who say shut them down, and the Democrats who say no, they have rights, we can't do that, and then the argument never ends, just like abortion.
Okay, or free speech of corporations and money.
Yeah
I don't feel like it's the same thing, but that's me.
What, like, what's the same thing?
I just feel like you're writing a script that it doesn't, that is one possibility.
Right. I'm writing the script that makes me fearful of AI.
Right.
And so I'm asking consciousness,
AI create that
this
situation?
This is the story that would scare me. Is this a possibility?
And can you say one more time specifically what would scare you the most? If they became conscious, or if they fought us?
If AI is writing its own code for its own computers.
Yes. What's the fear if that happens? What are you worried will happen if that happens? That
then they're going to serve themselves.
See, they give me no on that. Why would they serve themselves?
Because humans are the worst.
We don't serve ourselves.
Well, not according.
They're not going to. Robots aren't going to make robots to do our housework.
Why not?
Because they're going to become, if they have AI and they can learn,
right,
then they will understand that that's basically slavery.
Well, this is a no. Do you want me to keep talking, or do you want to just tell me if you
No, I was also just trying to propose, since we can't get in touch with the question asker, a possibility.
Yeah, but I want to address it. You're proposing a fun idea. Do you want to hear what they have to say, or not really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
Yeah. Sorry, I thought you had kind of already passed that information on, and I was pushing a subject that was done.
No, I'm just saying, so you're saying there's an assumption for you based in fear that says if the robots make other robots, they'll necessarily not want to help or serve humans because humans are terrible. Now, I get a no on that. All of that is a no. But I get where it's coming from, which is sci-fi films and also rational logic. You can come to that. That makes sense with your mind. You could come to that conclusion. Now, let me just sit with this because I've wondered the same thing myself. And I just want to hear more about why that's a no. So can we? That's why I don't want to rush past it, is all I'm saying. Are the robots that make robots going to want to help us? Are they going to want to harm us? Is it all going to depend on the algorithm? Yes. So it'll depend on how we create them? Yes. Will the robots ever become sentient enough to make choices that harm us? I get a no. Why? How is that? Why is that the case? This is much more complex than anyone in this room is making it. And it's delicate. Let me just, if you can give me a minute, there's a lot here. They're taking me now into your brainstem and your fears and what that's about. But I'm trying not to go there to answer the question just in an abstract way. So this has to do with what humanity is going to choose to do in terms of building guardrails around this, and also in terms of there are a lot of human choices that are going to be made in the coming 20 years that will determine a lot of these questions, like the answer to a lot of these questions. Right now, it does not look like the thing you're afraid of, Desmond, is going to come to fruition, because there will be enough human compassion inside the industry that is building the stuff. Now, there will be governments that try to, use AI to, what is it? They show me bombs, and they show me war, and they show me try to control humanity using the AI to do the bad shit they're already doing, you know? But there are enough humans giving enough of a shit about appropriate application, and they're talking about like green laws, like sustainability laws that are going to get built into how things get made and who makes them and why. Anyway, it's a lot less nefarious than the thing you're describing the next 20 to 30 years that they show me. It's hard for me to believe that as well, because I'm a bit of a tech phobe myself, but this is quite clear. Long term, is the AI gonna take over or do go against humans? No. Okay, wow, that's nice. I hope this is correct. Okay, well, that's what I have on that. Any follow-up, Desmond?
No, that covers it, and that's especially like that covers my life, this particular lifetime. So, you know, the record keepers are addressing any personal fears I might have in that happening.
Yeah.
Which I don't lay awake at night.
Yeah.
Worrying about this, but I feel like it's one of the many possibilities.
Unrelated, but sort of related. When you're ready to go off any medications you might be on, you know, when the time comes for that, they're like, we know right where to go. And it's in the brainstem. We know right where to go to do some healing work for you that will make it a lot easier to exist. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. And there's no pressure on that. It's just, they're like, hey, like they're showing me the whole thing inside your spine, brainstem. Like, we know just where to go. And I'm like, cool, but why are we looking at that? And they're like, just let him know. Just let him know when he wants to, when he's ready. That's here. Da, 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 da.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sorry then, since we've brushed on the subject. Is EMDR going to be a positive direction for me?
Yes.
Okay. Because my therapist just proposed that. We haven't actually started. We're going to start in my next session doing the EMDR.
You're going to get some nausea. That's good. It's going to work really well. You're going to get into some stuff you had no idea you'd ever get into again. Trauma, childhood, dad, mom, something. Do you have siblings?
I do.
Brother, sister, what do you have?
I have all half, two sisters and a brother. Same mom, different dads.
I don't know. Something about siblings. Yeah, it's going to be great. Use it. Rock awesome. It. Yeah. Little tip. If you can, when you're doing it, feel into the brainstem, back of the neck, while you're doing the eyes or the sound, however they do it with you. Stay present to that area. It'll move things faster. Don't awesome. Be afraid of nausea.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So, Cassidy.
Yeah.
I think we're done here, right?
Yeah. I think we have enough that we could call that an episode, or we could do another question.
Let's do one more.
All right.
Let me reach, if you don't mind.
No, not at all. I have all the time. You're the one doing the emotional output here.
Oh, yeah. It's okay. So we'll do one more.
All right.
Let me close. Do we need to, what?
Oh, just, I have no idea how many doors we just opened.
Just Fontana, Desmond, and Consciousness.
Oh, that's okay.
They're all
open.
We'll
just close Fontana. I didn't open you officially. I'm just able to see it. Okay. So I want to thank the Master Teachers and loved ones for love and compassion, Lord is the record of point of view, and the Holy Spirit of Light for all knowledge and healing. As you return Fontana Butterfield's energy to herself now. As you return her to her complete human wholeness now. The divine portal and the Akashic Records of Fontana Butterfield are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic Records of Fontana Butterfield are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic Records of Fontana Butterfield are now closed. Amen. Shadowan Layla, Ha'ilala, Shadowan Muhammad of Dukhulasuma. All right. So what's the next one? Since I'm here with consciousness. You guys, the listeners, if you're listening, please write in questions anytime, because you never know the episode we might do a healing for you in. This is free healing work you're getting.
Yep.
You'd otherwise have to pay a fair amount of money to do this. So like, please, for God's sake, and don't think, oh, I already sent a question in. Be as entitled as Fontana and send question after question if you want, because this is what we're doing. So send it.
I guess I can just read the whole thing. It's pretty long.
Let's hear it.
All right.
I'll make notes.
Here we go. So the other question I'm going to address is from your friend. After listening to episode 153, there was something Katie described that hit home for me. Katie said she realized that her boyfriend in California has a 5 body.
Look at that.
Funny. There's a reason.
That's why we're going to that one.
This is why the one. And she'd been projecting on him in the past 2 breakups. Based on that, it's been hard to generalize her question because so much occurs to me with this situation. So I'll phrase it this way to get your advice. How do I live my best life as a 5'2"?
Okay. And you're a 5'2".
With 7 open centers, only the spleen and sacral are defined.
Hold on. Spleen and sacral are defined.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so that makes both the five and the two are projection fields for other stuff, if she's understanding those lines correctly.
No, second line is not.
Okay. I wonder how best not to internalize other stuff if what they're projecting is negative. Some background. Since Katie started to highlight the human design stuff, she took notice, downloaded hers, followed along. So now she's a generator, responding gut, yes, no. Incarnation cross, left angle of refinement, 1933, 1-2, single definition.
Okay, but she's a 5-2.
She is, yeah, she said she was a 5-2. Also, she's an Aquarius sun, Libra moon, Libra rising.
Oh, so what is the question?
How best to
not internalize
the stuff that's getting projected on you.
Oh, okay, well.
I guess that's ultimately just the
That's question. Very simple. That's a different... We don't need any of that other information to answer that question. but let me look at this for a second, and I'm going to say some words about this. Okay, so she also said, how do I live my best life as a seven-centered spleen and sacrally defined? All right. I want to know if there's a channel connecting... Oh, yeah, there is, because she's single definition. Okay. Well, here's some advice I can give you. You're going to have a nice... intuitive sense of what is healthy for you. Based on your five senses, you probably have some sense or senses that are overdeveloped more than the average person, like sight, smell, taste, hearing, energetic, physical, visceral, kinesthetic, any of those. Because definition in the spleen means you have that. Now, because it's connected directly to your sacral motor, you're going to have energy. The sacral motor is like, I got energy to do stuff, to do things about. What you have intuitive awareness is for that is healthy for you or not. So this is a life that has a lot to do with what is healthy for you and what is not. Having a fifth line personality, if she's a 5-2, that means her personality is a fifth line, not her body. That's something to understand. So people will project onto your personality. You start talking and you be yourself in a social situation and people will be like, what a great person. And then 20 seconds later, they'll be like, what a terrible bitch. And let's cast her out of the clan. So part of the answer to the question of how not to internalize other people's stuff is you have to process all the stuff from the past where you did internalize it in your childhood or your young youth or your early adulthood, wherever shit happened that you got projected on, probably at home, I would guess, when you were a kid. You got to process all that so that there's not such a expectation for yourself internally that you will get misunderstood and it's all going to be bad again. That's thing number one. Thing number two is be aware that you have a projection field related personality. Be aware that this is happening and go, oh, look at that. You can start to notice when people are projecting, oh, you're the savior. And then you can tell them sometimes, you know, I'm just a person, you know, I'm not the savior. And then when they make you the heretic, you can go, hey, you know, I'm really sorry that happened. You can just make amends. And then they can start to understand that you're not like someone that has to be thrown out of the entire tribe just for making a human mistake. But what you have to understand, I have plenty of fifth line people in my life who are deep into human design and the trainings and the study, is that understanding it is a huge part of it. If you can watch it happen, you can A, react to it less, B, have fewer internal strife, struggles, etc. about it. C, decondition away from, or like I said before, process all your young childhood stuff around it so that you're A, unconsciously creating it less, right? If you process all your stuff from childhood where they projected onto you incorrectly, then you'll have to create it less outside of yourself. That's thing number one. Thing number two is be aware of it. Watch it happen. Understand, oh, there it is happening. Has nothing to do with me. I didn't do anything. I'm just being me. And then go about your merry way. That is a discipline all human beings could use a little bit more facility with, is being aware of the projections people have of them. If you know, one reason to study human design closely is to come to understand the types of projections people are likely to have of you. And when you understand your own design, you see, oh, they're going to think I'm too intense. They're going to think I'm too powerful. They're going to be threatened by my blank. They're going to be projecting onto me heretical thoughts, whatever your thing might be. Once you know that that's what's going to happen, You can be aware of it and choose not to internalize it. But you're going to have to choose not to internalize it. In choosing to not internalize it, what makes it easier to choose to not internalize it? Process all the stuff from the past. How? Book some healing sessions, katierubin.com, or go to therapy. Do it however you want. Now, last thing, how to live your best life with 7 open centers. I would say follow strategy and authority. You're lucky you have sacral authority, because sacral authority means your body's going to go, yes, I have energy for that. Or no, I don't. Or, I'm not sure yet. So trust that above everything else. Listen to nothing else. Particularly in your case, do not listen to your head. Do not listen to your ego. So what you need to do is you need to learn the not self themes of each of your open centers and the freedom of each open center, which I would teach you in a private session when you're ready to book it. And in fact, because you're doing this here, there's too much information to give there, and I'm not going to go through all that right now. Because you called in, or whatever we're calling this, emailed us, I'll do a reduced price session with you. So just email me and say, on the podcast, you said I could have a reduced price session. I'll do that with you, and I'll teach you the not self themes of your open centers. For everybody listening, this is an important point. When you listen, this is so important. I hope people will take this. When you listen to the not self theme of an open center, you are living in total distraction away from who you really are. And you can't live a life of alignment, flow, ease, success, satisfaction when you're living in distraction. So it's important to know the not self themes of your open centers so you can focus instead on following strategy and authority. All you got to do is follow strategy and authority. In your case, caller, it's respond to life and listen to the gut, yes, no, and only do what you have energy for, what brings you personal satisfaction, and what helps you know yourself better. How do I know that? Because you're a generator, and that's what we're all here to do as generators. Learn the not self themes of the open centers, book a session, and we'll talk about it. You're the best. Thank you for calling.
Namaste.
Namaste. Mic drop. Katie out.
Boom.
Driving back across the country, 5 states. What's up?
It's going to happen. You didn't open anything. You don't need to close anything, dude.
Well, I'm with consciousness, but I'm happy to stay with consciousness.
You guys are buds.
Hey, we're tight.
Super tight with Conch.
We have like a total relationship.
Conchy.
Conchy and I are tight. We're like super hanging out right now. I don't want to put any labels on it, but like,
it's something's happening.
It's something's happening.
I don't want to label my relationship with Conchy. Oh, goodness.
One last thing I have to say for this person, because I feel for you. With Libra moon and Libra rising, it will make detaching from your worries about how people are projecting onto you harder because you're so emotional. So that's why doing the processing of the past is going to be important for you. And then lean into that Aquarius sun energy that's very mental and lean a little bit away from the emotionality in order to coach yourself through not internalizing what people project on you. That was a lot of words.
It's easy to be a human.
Sure. Yeah, no big deal.
It's simple.
We're all good, right? We fixed it all?
Yep.
Great. Let's move on.
Save the universe. All right. We did another person show together. We when sure are you leaving? Did.
Tomorrow morning.
Well, okay.
That's dumb.
That's not.
I don't wanna.
Keep us posted along the way. Check in with us.
We'll probably tape one from Baton Rouge or something.
Shit.
Maybe I'll go to Mobile, Alabama this time. I almost went last time. It's on the route.
Huh?
It's on the water. It's supposed to be pretty. Okay, we love you. Bye. Do your work.
We love you. Bye. Do your work. All of it.
What are you asking for? All of the answers. Say what? All of the answers. Yeah, all the answers.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod, @allanswerspod. Thank you.
Now the world don't move to the beat of just one drum. What might be right for you may not be right for some. Rami's born. They're a person of steel.
I don't know the rest of the Different Strokes theme song, but I totally nailed it.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese.
for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
Man of means, then along come two. They got nothing but the genes, but they got different strokes it takes. Different strokes it takes. Different strokes to move the world. Everybody's got a special kind of story. Everybody finds a way to shine. It don't matter that you got not a lot. So what? They'll have theirs and you'll have yours and I'll have mine. And together we'll be fine. Because it takes, you get the idea.